Composer Peter Boyer joins me on Classical Conversations today to get the word out about his new Rhapsody, which he wrote for the centennial of George Gershwin's iconic Rhapsody in Blue. Peter's work, though, is called Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue, and he recorded it with pianist Jeffrey Beagle and the London Symphony Orchestra. So, welcome, Peter, and maybe you could tell us a little something about the origin of this commission.
Sure, and thank you for having me on this morning. It's a pleasure to be here. And this is a very unusual project, I would say, for any composer, but certainly for me personally, within the scope of my career, it's something different from any project that I've done. And as you mentioned, this Rhapsody was conceived for and commissioned by pianist Jeffrey Beagle, who's from Long Island in New York, a very prodigious pianist who has been commissioning works for piano and orchestra for quite a long time, more than 25 years, and he's commissioned more than 25 pieces for piano and orchestra, which I think is quite unusual, if not unprecedented, among American pianists. And he approached me a full 4 years ago in early 2020. It was actually not long before the pandemic, so it was a kind of moment that we all remember pre-pandemic, before the world got crazy for quite a long time. And he approached me and said, I have this very grand idea for a work that will celebrate the centennial of George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, which at that point was, 4 years into the future, that he wanted to be called Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue, a very specific and interesting and, potentially terrifying title for a composer to try to live up to this. And he said, I would like a piece that is for piano and orchestra that will be about as long as Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, so 17, 18 minutes, and that could be performed alongside it or individually but on its own, and something that will in some way pay homage to that piece, but will stand on its own. And he said, and by the way, I have this equally grand plan to perform the piece with orchestras in all 50 states. So my initial reaction was essentially that I thought he was crazy because this sounded too ambitious and almost impossible. And I thought for any American composer to take up the challenge of a piece that's called Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue, a composer is then going to be inviting comparisons. And people who know and love Rhapsody in Blue, which is everyone, are going to want to compare this piece. And boy, that's a very big, mountain to climb. And I thought the 50 state thing was a wonderful idea, but almost impossible. But amazingly, if fast forward to the future, after months and months of work over the span of a long period of time, over 2 years with a break in between, I did do this piece, and happily it has turned out well. And amazingly, Jeffrey will be performing it with orchestras in all 50 states over a 3 or 4 year period. So I tip my hat to him for having this kind of crazy ambition and for pulling me along in this journey.
It's certainly an exciting and ambitious project. At what point did you feel like you warmed up to the idea? You mentioned being a little bit terrified with that comparison. So when were you convinced?
It did take some time. We had multiple conversations. And as I said, it was the initial idea was just before the pandemic. And so, of course, when the pandemic hit, it also was a seismic event that really shook the foundations of, performance and classical music, and other projects that I had were, canceled. And Jeffrey was still there pushing away at me. And even, I must say, just from a practical point of view, even during the pandemic, when everything was very uncertain, he kept fundraising, which is a very important thing. And that kind of assured me that, okay, this can happen from that point of view. But I started to really look at Rhapsody in Blue, which of course I knew, but I didn't know in great detail. And I started to study it and tried to get my head around this iconic, unique piece from 100 years ago, and to try to get inside the style a little bit and say, how can I, as a composer, have some kind of homage to Gershwin? How can I get inside the style in a way that will be obviously different from what he would have done, but if audiences were to hear this piece for the first time, they would hear that I'm kind of playfully and respectfully tipping my hat to George Gershwin, at least for some of it. And the more that I played around with Rhapsody in Blue, the more that at least I got to get some sense of the style and figure out a way that I could do that. But a big part of the challenge, which took a long time, was to figure out, how much of the piece, 17, 18 minute piece, will I do that for, and how much will just be my own language? And in the end, you know, several minutes, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes worth of the piece is a kind of clear homage to the 20s. But as you say, warming up, that took quite a long time, and finding the final form of the piece, that took months. That took a very long time. But once I accepted the commission, I knew that I had to do it, right? So there was no turning back. I just had to keep on climbing the mountain every day and have some faith that eventually I was going to get there. And eventually I did. But yeah, it was not an easy thing.
There's no motivation like a solid deadline. That's for sure.
That's right.
So the final form that you landed on, is that similar to Gershwin's Rhapsody as well?
Yes, in the sense that both Rhapsody in Blue and My Rhapsody are long single movements with multiple sections. So in that sense, they are similar. They both contain fast and energetic music as well as slow and lyrical music. So in that sense, also, they are similar. And then they're different in other ways. The big section of the piece that I consider the kind of homage to Gershwin, I kind of playfully call the bluesy scherzo, right? So this has aspects of symphonic form to it, but really it's a series of 5 or 6 sections that are, you know, about 3 minutes each. The slow lyrical section is longer, it's more like 4.5 minutes that comes after the midway point of the piece. So very broadly speaking, you know, there's a similarity, but stylistically, of course, they're quite different. But it is, it's uninterrupted. And so, you know, it's for any composer to write 17 and a half or 18 minutes with no interruption, that's a big challenge as well, to hold the attention of the audience throughout that piece, to take them on a journey from point A to B to C to Z, and have them hopefully not get bored and have the whole piece feel organic. That is a big challenge. So yeah, in a broad sense, it's like Gershwin's Rhapsody.
I'm thinking about Gershwin's Rhapsody, and I think a lot of people remember that crazy clarinet part in the beginning. And do you feel like you wanted to incorporate any moments like that, which really, like, I don't know, serve as a hook or something that people will really want to or really take away after experiencing the Rhapsody?
Well, yeah, you mentioned, of course, the very famous opening clarinet glissando or smear, you know, which is one of the most recognizable things in all of American music. I didn't do that. That would have been, I think, a bit too much of a direct quote. The thought occurred to me, and then I thought, you know, that's no, we're not going to do that. So in terms of hooks, you know, hook is an interesting term, because that term tends to come from pop music. And of course, Gershwin came from popular song and was wonderful at, you know, what we would call melodic hooks and things that stick in the head. And so there are rhythmic hooks, and there are stylistic references. But I think the most perhaps overtly memorable part of the piece is the slow lyrical section, which I worked on for a very, very long time, and of which I'm very proud, that I think after just endless attempts and revisions, I came up with melodic material, a melody, a tune, and the way it's harmonized in the solo piano that I think is lovely and helped, for me, evoke a kind of sense of the beautiful wide open spaces of America. That's a moment that Jeffrey, you know, as a soloist, begins on his own. And then the orchestra takes it up, and it has a kind of cinematic quality, almost this sense of flying over these beautiful spaces of America. The ability of music to do that, I think, is a very special characteristic of music. And so that probably is something that I think that maybe the audiences might remember the most. And, you know, the piece has had quite a few performances already, more than 15. And we'll have many more. And that's been something that Jeffrey has heard and that I have heard from audience members, is that kind of slow lyrical section. But both a very big chunk of the beginning and the very last section are completely filled with energy, with rhythmic energy. And that's something that is, it doesn't sound, frankly, I think, anything like Gershwin. It's quite different. It sounds more like me. But I think Gershwin really captured the energy and optimism of the early and mid 20s, you know, before the Great Depression. We think of New York and the skyscrapers going up and that era. And he captures that so well in Rhapsody in Blue. And I tried to capture a kind of 21st century energy and optimism. And there are similarities, but it's much more me. Also, I have had an even bigger orchestra. So that's helpful.
Considering the beautiful American wide open spaces that you were talking about, it feels very fitting that this is then being performed in all 50 states. Is that why Jeffrey wanted to call it the Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue?
I think he had multiple motivations. I think part of it was it's clever. It's a title that you say it to anybody that's never heard it before, and they immediately know it's American. They know it must have some kind of relationship to Rhapsody in Blue. But I think Jeffrey's idea, which is, again, a very grand idea and very ambitious, was that partially is because we live in such divided times. These are, such polarized times. People are angry at each other over many things in a way that is more than I remember it in my lifetime. And music, of course, can be, hopefully in some very small way, a sort of vessel for optimism, for bringing people together, and people who are in a shared concert space, sitting, listening to a pianist and an orchestra, even for, 17, 18 minutes, maybe it sounds a little pie in the sky, but I believe this can feel a little bit closer together. And I think he wanted to try to achieve this in all of the states, so that at least in each place and each moment in time, this could be felt. And again, it may sound a little corny, but this really does seem to be happening with each of these performances, because this has been the response from audience members. I mean, there have been tears, there have been tremendous standing ovations, there's been a sense of community. I've only been at a couple of these, and Jeffrey's been at all of them, obviously playing them with different conductors. But there has been this sense. And so I think that ultimately, over the 3 or 4 years that it's going to take him to actually do all of these performances, is a fulfillment of that vision that is very special and very unique.
I want to take a moment to talk a little bit about the recording you did with the London Symphony Orchestra. And I understand you conducted that. Is that right?
I did.
So how do you feel like being the composer and then the conductor as well? What was that experience like for you?
Well, it's a wonderful experience. It's one that I've had, fortunately, on many occasions. And what's interesting is that, my life as a composer involves dealing with lots of orchestras and lots of conductors. And I've been very fortunate to have many great conductors conduct my music. And so to be a composer only and to watch another conductor conduct one's music and to sit in the audience and give notes in rehearsal is great and enjoyable. But it is different from actually then standing on the podium and conducting the music oneself. And particularly when one has spent months, literally months, just alone in one studio trying to solve the problems musically, trying to figure it out. And then ultimately getting a chance to stand on the podium, for 4 hours in this case, in front of one of the greatest orchestras in the world, the London Symphony Orchestra, in a truly great studio, Air Studios Lyndhurst Hall, with all of this history. And in this case, with the soloist for whom I wrote the piece, sitting there and beautifully playing the piece. There's a tremendous sense of accomplishment and satisfaction that goes with that. But also, it's a kind of combination of one wants to enjoy that moment and sort of luxuriate and all that. But, of course, one has to really focus and do one's job on the podium. And it's a lot of work, actually. So that's an interesting balance to take. But just as one very practical example, the opening of the piece, which is a kind of fanfare-ish, energetic material, I wrote it and wanted a quite fast tempo. And I know that some conductors have taken it a little bit slower because it's a little hard to execute. And that's perfectly fine. But with the London Symphony Orchestra, there's no need to hold back whatsoever. And so, from the very beginning of the piece, downbeat, top of the recording session, just starting counting off four in that tempo and hearing the LSO absolutely, just give it at that tempo, was great. And I thought, okay, we can definitely play this at this tempo. So that becomes the tempo of the actual recording. That becomes the benchmark that audiences hear and that other conductors will hear. So that's very fun.
Well, you've got me very eager to hear it. I'm wondering when this Rhapsody is going to be touring through Ohio.
That's a very good question. So there are two different orchestras in Ohio that are playing it. And I'm going from memory here. So Central Ohio Symphony and Butler Symphony, both of which are smaller budget orchestras. And I think, I don't know that the date is set yet. I think 25-26, the 25-26 season, I think for both of those. So we'll kind of have to check back. If anybody's interested in looking at the whole sort of gamut of all the performances and what has been scheduled so far, my website is propulsivemusic.com, propulsive like propulsion, propulsivemusic.com. And there's a calendar. And as all of these get confirmed, I put them on the calendar. So I think we've got close to 30 out of the 50 that have been scheduled so far, and they'll be unfolding. And honestly, now that the recording is coming out and there's a lot of interest, it looks like we might even have more. We have 54 orchestras as of today, which is pretty unprecedented for a piano and orchestra new piece. But I think we're going to sail past 60, which is really something. So a lot of rhapsody out there.
That is incredible. And this touring season is extending all the way to 2026 and 27?
Yes, because the original idea, the piece was premiered in the summer of 2023. Yes, it all blurs. We're in 2024 now, right? Yeah, so June of 2023, the Utah Symphony premiered it at the opening of their summer festival. And then it had many performances fall of 23. And now we're into 24, lots scheduled for 24, 25. But, you know, the way that this project has been working is that many of these orchestras have signed on and said, okay, we'll do it, let's say, in the 25, 26 season. But Jeffrey has to actually, of course, go to all of these places, and he has to work out the scheduling with all these orchestras. So we're realizing that three seasons probably isn't enough to actually get all 50 done just because of scheduling. So he's going to take it into 26, 27. And of course, in the summer of 2026, we will have the 250th anniversary of the United States, for which I'm doing another couple big projects that haven't been announced yet. And so that's also a great reason to be playing a piece with the title Rhapsody in Red, White, and Blue as the 250th anniversary of America is celebrated in 2026. So yeah, I think the Rhapsody will be going one place at a time, one city at a time.
Yeah. Well, we will mark our calendars and very much looking forward to hearing it, if not live here in Ohio or one of the other states, then in that incredible recording with Jeffrey Beagle and the London Symphony Orchestra. Peter Boyer, thank you so much for your comments.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.